Well, this is Bard's MBA in Sustainability, Sustainable Business Fridays, and we're talking today with Clif Bar's Vice President for Environmental Stewardship, Elisa Hammond, about their quintuple bottom line and their work trying to green the global food system. So, Elisa, thank you.
Thank you so much, Eben. It's an honor to be here. I was saying I want to make three main points today with this conversation, and the first one is that conversation creates change. The sustainability program started at Clif Bar long before I was employed there. It started with conversation between myself and the founder. The other point, two points I want to make is that we have five bottom lines, an expanded triple bottom line approach, and I'll talk about that. And then that food matters, that it's really an honor to be working in the world of food. All of us touch food, are part of the food system every day, so we all have an opportunity to create positive change in really significant ways. So I'd like to go back to that first point about conversation creates change and how I ended up in this position at Clif Bar. I met the founder of Clif Bar, Gary Erickson, when we were both undergrad students at Cal Poly, now many years ago. And he was a student of business and I was a student of agriculture. And we met in a student group working on world hunger issues. And we began a conversation talking about how in business, striving for maximizing profits in the short term really does damage to people's health and the health of the planet. And I was finding the same thing in conventional agriculture, that maximizing the use of chemical fertilizers and pesticides to maximize yields and profit was also doing damage to people's health and the planet's health. And so we started this conversation at that time as undergraduate students about sustainability. But we didn't talk about sustainability at that time. It wasn't part of the vocabulary. But we started this conversation about a vision to work in the food world of food in a different way. And we continued that conversation over the many years as we went our separate ways. Gary went on to found a bakery. He was an athlete, and he was interested in food and starting and actually creating a bakery to sell his grandmother's Greek pastries. And as an athlete, he paid attention to food, and when he was on a 160-mile bike ride, he had this, what he called the epiphany of creating an energy bar that would serve athletes' needs, but that would be made with whole natural foods, be good for you and good to eat. And that was the beginning of Clif Bar. And at the same time, I went pursuing my dreams to work in projects in similar approach as the Peace Corps, working in agroecological approaches to farming, working, as mentioned, in Mexico and Peru and Indonesia. But every year I came back to the country, we would meet and we'd continue our conversation about creating a different kind of food system. And in 2000, Clif Bar then was started in 1992. And when Gary started it, he had a business partner. And that, the Clif Bar grew. It grew quite, it was amazing, with amazing success. And in 2000, the two leading competing bars, Power Bar was purchased by Nestle, and Balance Bar was purchased by Kraft, the two biggest food companies in the world. And a lot of people told Gary that they would never make it in this kind of competitive atmosphere. And his partner wanted out. And after much reflection and an offer of a significant amount of money, Gary wanted to stay and maintain ownership of Clif Bar. And there's a story called Raising the Bar where he talks about walking away from a $120 million offer for the company in order to stay private. He was able to buy out his partner, and in 2000, when he got control of the company, we talked again, and he said, you know, now I have control of the company, and I want to run the company, the kind of company I would want to work for. And he started a lot of different programs, a community service program, employee benefits like exercising on company time, community service on company time. And he called me up and said, you know, let's take Clif Bar organic. Let's do what we always talked about, and asked if I would come on and help with that role. And that's how I ended up at Clif Bar, really trying to bring to life these conversations that started 20 years prior. So as I worked closely looking at this positive impact that it would make to both the environment and to people's health by transitioning from conventional to organic ingredients, Gary and I began another conversation that this really isn't just about organic. This is about sustainability. And with my background in ecology, I was thinking of it from a point of view of soil health and nutrient cycling and the way ecologists think about sustainability. But Gary said, after some reflection on this, he said, you know, for me, sustainability really starts with sustaining the control of your company. Because if you lose control, you can't make any of the other decisions that will be essential to sustaining people, communities, and planet. And that's how we ended up with our five bottom lines, which I'll tell you are, number one, sustaining our business, sustaining our brands, sustaining our people, which are our employees, sustaining our communities, and sustaining the planet, which is the aspiration that my job as Director of Environmental Stewardship, that's my area of responsibility. And I just want to give a couple points what that means. When we say sustaining our business, it does mean maintaining control of the company, staying private. And now, as of a few years ago, it also means that we're 20% of the company is employee-owned. And we are investing for the long term in this company. Sustaining the brands means our brands, Clif Brand, Clif Bar, Luna Bar, Mojo, Clif Kid, Builders Bar, Shot, and now Kits Organic, that these brands have integrity and quality, and the programs that we use, we don't advertise. We reach out to let people learn about our company by sponsoring events, sponsoring athletes, getting outdoors, meeting people, and we want to make sure that those programs that represent our brands have integrity as well. An example of that is our women's bar, Luna Bar. We sponsored the first ever professional women's mountain biking team, and the Luna Chicks are now the number one mountain biking team in the world for both men and women. And we also sponsor a program called Luna Fest, which is a women's film festival to bring awareness to women's health issues, raise money for the Breast Cancer Fund, and also give a platform for women filmmakers. In sustaining our people, you come to our office. We're in a LEED certified office. You can bring your dog to work. We've got you can have coaches at our in-company gym, in-company climbing wall. And what I'm most proud of are sustainability benefits. We have, you can receive $6,500 to help you buy a fuel-efficient hybrid or electric car. We have funding to help you do energy improvements in your home. And as of this year, we'll also repay you if you want to purchase a national park pass. Our community service program, we're aiming for our 375 employees to donate 8,000 hours of community service on company time. And we have a program where we collaborate with other companies to work in a focused way in one community. They just finished a project in the South Bronx with, I think, 21 different companies working together to help build a youth center on environmental justice. And then the area that I work in, and I'm very grateful to Eben, having met him more than a decade ago, to put a stake in the ground in our environmental program, the Planet Aspiration, on climate. And as an ecologist, I knew that for our sustainability program to have integrity, we'd have to make a deep commitment to understanding and taking responsibility for our contribution to carbon emissions and climate change. So one of the things I want to say again about conversation creates change, five bottom lines, is that in every step of the way as we work to reduce our impact, it's the conversations and the partnerships along the way that are educating us and empowering us and guiding us. So So at Cliff Bar, the key areas we're working in are tracking and offsetting our carbon emissions, working to reduce emissions through not just in our own company, but field to final product, really working to have conversations with supply chain partners about how they can use renewable energy. Over the past 10 years, we've worked with Native Energy to help build, provide the hurdle funding for more than 30 different renewable energy projects, including 5 school-owned wind turbines in Indiana. And most important of all the work we do on climate and energy, it's our commitment to organic and sustainable agriculture that I know has the biggest impact. Because when you stop using chemical fertilizers and instead use organic matter and increase soil fertility, you're storing significant amounts of carbon in the soil instead of releasing it to the atmosphere. And so organic is not just providing healthy food without pesticides, which is really important, but it's also part of the climate solution. So since 2002, when we made our first purchase of 2 million pounds of organic ingredients, we've made a commitment to steadily increase our use of organic and the percentage of organic that we're buying. In this last year, we purchased 330 million pounds of organic ingredients. We impacted by just our purchase of organic oats and soy alone, more than 18,000 acres of land, avoiding the use of more than 6 million pounds of chemical fertilizers. And as what I've seen is really to help support a more transformative way of using the land that generates multiple benefits. So with that, I have talked a whole lot, but that closing point about supporting organic farming brings me to that third point I wanted to make about food matters, because food is the food system is responsible for almost 20% of energy use in our economic system. So everything we do to reduce and that impact of food by supporting agriculture with less chemicals, by reducing waste, by reducing consumption of meat, we're making a huge impact in many different areas of environmental health, climate, and most recently we did a study of organic ingredients and found that it also makes a positive economic contribution. We found that overall, the use of organic ingredients in place of conventional creates about a 20% increase in job creation in the United States. This was a study done by an agricultural economist from Cornell, that studied at Cornell, and he did a study for the Organic Trade Association in using conventional economic methods, identified that we're creating more jobs from field to final product. So I'll end with that job creation piece and let you guys ask me questions.
Lisa, thank you so much. And if you're just joining the call, you're with us on Sustainable Business Fridays. My name is Evan Goodstein. I'm the director of the program. I just want to acknowledge the important role that Lisa has played in the creation of Bard's new MBA in sustainability. I met Lisa over a dozen years ago, and my experience with Cliff Bar over the years as a real touchstone, really, in terms of thinking about what a sustainable company is, really guided my own intellectual thinking, and I'm grateful for that relationship. And it very directly, I think, led to our effort at Bard to put together this MBA in sustainability program. So thank you, Lisa. Turning it back now over to Amy Davila and Megan Ryan, who are going to lead the questions.
Great. Thank you, Evan. And thank you so much, Lisa. It's always so inspiring to hear you share some of these amazing stories about the Bard's history and the role that it plays today in really transforming the food system. And I think I'd like to start the questions thinking about your third point about food matters, which really resonates with me personally, and I'd love to learn more about that. But I think something that really stands out to me about Cliff Bar and something that differentiates the company even among other companies that are similarly trying to grow in the organic field is the deep commitment to sourcing organic ingredients and to not using any genetically modified ingredients. And when you made that choice, I know you've shared with me that you took the whole portfolio of products on that journey towards moving to organic rather than starting with just one product as a pilot. And I wonder if you could talk a bit about that decision, that moment in the company when you all decided to really commit to organic, and whether that was a challenging choice to make or an easy one, and how it affects the business today.
Thank you, Megan. That's a great question. You know, that was back in 2002. We started out with an internal education program about why organic matters, how organic is connected to sustainability. But it finally came to some, you know, critical decisions among leadership about how do we go organic? Do we take, we're going to start with Clif Bar brand, and do we take just one flavor organic to see how that goes, or do we take the entire brand? At that time, we were just Clif brand and Luna brand. And the decision was made is we're doing this because it's the right thing to do. It's the right thing for people's health and the environment. And so there was a commitment made to take the whole brand organic in spite of the increased cost of the ingredients. So there was really a commitment to do the right thing there. It was a risk. It was a conversation. These five aspirations that guide our decision-making means that everyone comes to the table, the business, the brands, the community, the people. We advocate for why this is a good decision, and we listen to one another. And in this way, we all came to the decision that we'd dive in all the way with the full brand. And a couple years later, we went on to Luna brand to then go organic. Since then, all the brands we've been making, we've been using organic ingredients from the beginning, but transitioning is not easy.
I wonder if you could talk a little bit about making that transition through your supply chain and the complexity of working with your suppliers to source globally for all of the ingredients that make up the FAR line of products, and how you were able to move them along with you on this kind of organic and sustainable journey.
You know, I cannot take credit for the nuts and bolts work of changing each and every ingredient. My role in sustainability is more the educator, the researcher, the cheerleader. But I know people put so much work in. We actually went organic the same year the national organic standards were launched. So instead of certifying, say, to the California organic standards, we were also in conversation with the USDA organic program to make sure that we were transitioning the right ingredients, the right percentage to meet the new standards. So part of that is having these really strong relationships with our ingredient vendors in the supply chain, and going to those vendors that you trust and say, we want to go organic. Do you have, if you're the oat supplier, do you have organic oats in your supply chain? You know, if not, can you bring them in? And when you bring in different ingredients, they have to also go through a testing again to see if they're baking the same, having the same quality in terms of taste. And so each change in ingredients is a really significant commitment of not only research in with the sourcing team, but then back into the R&D team, the people making sure that we're continuing the same quality of products. That transition process, those conversations and that research, that has, since that started in 2002, it continues today because we continue to reach for increasingly higher numbers of organic ingredients and now also certified sustainable ingredients. All our cacao now in our Clif Bar brand is all now certified Rainforest Alliance. So that work is ongoing, and it is, it's not easy.
And are there other ways that you're working with your suppliers as partners to encourage them to become more sustainable in their own business operations through emissions tracking or offsetting?
We have, with all of our suppliers, we have conversations about our sustainability values. We have a code of conduct to make sure that fair labor is part of our contract. We have a traceability program to make sure we understand where ingredients come from and how they move from field to final product. We ask them about do they have a sustainability program? Do they use renewable energy? Do they have track their carbon footprint? Would they like, are they interested? If they don't, would they like help with this? And then we work very closely with what we call our tier one supply chain, you know, like our logistics partners that ship our products, the places where Clif Bar are manufactured, so that in those tier one supply chains, the places where Clif Bars are being made, packaged, shipped, we actually are measuring our carbon footprint. We're putting practices in to reach zero waste. We've even invited these tier one supply chain partners to join us in community service projects. They've launched some amazing programs that we all celebrate because we feel like we're doing what we call now think like a tree. Create a supply chain that thinks like a tree is a supply chain that runs on renewable energy, just like a tree is solar powered. Create zero waste, where all waste can be food back into the system. And then to sustain and improve the place you grow. So that, I think, is one of the newer and more exciting areas of sustainability, is bringing the sustainability conversation back through the supply chain.
Absolutely. I love that concept of think like a tree. I'm going to think on that. That's terrific. And speaking about new initiatives, we saw a press release from just a couple of days ago announcing that Clif Bar is providing $500,000 in funding for graduate students that are studying organic plant breeding. Can you talk a bit about that initiative and how that fits into your approach to sustainability?
You know, when we talked about our commitment to organic, it isn't limited to just the ingredients we buy. Through the Clif Bar Family Foundation, which started in 2006, we have three priorities: sustainable food and agriculture, environment, and a holistic approach to community health. And we said, what is it that's missing in the support for organic? And we understood that seeds, having organic seed supply sufficient to support a healthy organic food system, was at risk. You know, you often hear that our food system is at risk, our food system is broken. The same goes for our seed system, you know, the very foundational building blocks of organic and sustainable farming. And the risk is coming from two kinds of pressures. One is just tremendous loss of the biodiversity that's needed, the seed genetic diversity for a sustainable food system. Increasingly, our seed companies are being bought up by larger companies, often agricultural chemical companies. And that's putting pressure on increasing the loss of diversity. There's also pressure from contamination of our seed supply from genetically engineered seed. So with those dual pressures and with the loss of farmer participation as seed innovators, back in 2009, we launched a program called Seed Matters with three goals: conserve crop genetic diversity, restore farmers' rights and roles as seed stewards and seed innovators, and then the third one, reinvigorate public seed research. So we knew that our public universities have a commitment to do research for the public good, including plant breeding research for public good. But increasingly, our public universities are doing research on patented seeds that the public can't use without entering into a seed contract, and that eliminates farmers' participation. So we saw that, you know, leadership in this area would come from students, graduate students, who would be the next generation of plant breeders. So we began a program of the first ever PhD programs in organic, and these are specifically for organic seed. So the press release you saw was just for this year's new group of four graduate students. They'll be supported for 5 years. They're at four different universities. We have a student in organic cotton in Texas. We've got a student working on organic corn in North Carolina, a variety that rejects genetically modified pollen. We've got a student working on organic carrots in Wisconsin and also researching the impact of patents on plant seed research. And then we have a student in the Northwest looking at organic, I believe, oats and wheat that are bred to thrive in those Northwest conditions. In addition to that, there's about eight other students that are out there now, some in their second or third year of the program, and I am just thrilled with this supporting graduate students.
Well, Lisa, that's wonderful to hear. We'd love some support for our graduate students, but we're not doing research in organic, but we've got an MBA in sustainability in New York City. If you're just joining us, this is Sustainable Business Fridays. We're talking to Elisa Hammond from Clif Bar, the VP for Environmental Stewardship. If you'd like to ask Elisa a question, you can hit 5-star on your phone, and that will enable you to speak. I want to just tell people that this is a first and fourth Fridays call, and at the end of October, October 25th, we're going to have Tamara Ryan, who is the CEO of the Women's Bean Project, on the line. The Women's Bean Project out of Denver, Colorado, employs chronically impoverished and unemployed women with transitional jobs, providing stepping stones to self-sufficiency through social enterprise. So that should be a great conversation. Mark that on your calendar, October 25th at noon. And back to Amy and Megan.
Thank you, Eben. Continuing with the questions, Elisa, in preparing for this call, we read that Clif Bar uses natural demand to drive new product innovation and line extensions. For example, just recently, about 2 years ago, Clif Bar expanded its line to include products for kids, such as Twisted Fruit Snacks, as well as Clif Kids C-Bars, which I'm seeing everywhere. Can you talk to us a little bit about the concept of natural demand and how it connects to Clif Line's product innovation strategy?
Thank you for that question. Clif Bar was born out of a really authentic natural demand by the founder himself wanting to have a product that he could use on these 100-mile bike rides or any other long athletic event that that there was no natural organic or whole foods product. And then once Clif Bar had been out for a few years, we got requests in from women saying, we really love Clif Bar, but we wish you would make one that was had less calories, had more iron, had more protein or calcium. And so out of that natural demand, that authentic request from women, Luna Bar was developed. And it was surprising because Luna Bar then grew at an even higher success rate than Clif Bar did. And over the years, then we would have requests for healthy kids snacks. And that's how how the Twisted Fruit and the kids, various products for kids have come to be in the last several years. And that is really at the core of all of our product development, because we believe if you create something that people really want and really need, you don't have to put an artificially high amount of money into advertising. We don't advertise at all. We try to get products out there through our field events and our programs so people can try them. And if they work, if they like them, that's how it will spread and grow without spending so much money on advertising. And our most recent product, Kits Organic, is really simple. It's only 4 or 5 ingredients, 100% organic. We were receiving requests for a product like that, and that's how that has come to be. Just a story on the kids' products, we also wanted to align programs that supported our vision for what we'd want this product to be. And there was a real increasing concern about kids spending so much time indoors and not getting outside and getting the physical activity they need. So along with our kids' programs, we have something called the Big Backyard Game Project, where every year we invite kids to invent a game that they play outside with their family or their friends and then submit the games to this contest. And 5 kids and their families are chosen as finalists and brought to San Francisco to play their games in a in a big park where other children can come in and play, and then the winner wins a $10,000 college scholarship for when they're old enough.
How cool. How old do you have to be? Is like there an age cutoff here? Can I come in my game?
Sorry, if you're over 12, you don't qualify.
Oh, I guess I'm a little bit beyond that. So we have 845-876-1923. 876-1923. You are live to ask your question.
Thank you. Hi. This is Jeff Scales. I'm not a student, but a practitioner in the financial planning field and dealing a lot with sustainable investments. And I was curious as to what type of corporate structure you have now, and have you considered, for example, because of the way your mission is set up, having a B corporation or a formal cooperative arrangement? How have you managed the growth of the company and the corporate structure simultaneously?
Thank you, Jeff. I'll try to answer that the best I can because my background is not in finance or business. But we went from being a privately held company to being 20% employee-owned. But those shares are not shares that you can take with you when you leave. Those shares were created so that you would have, in addition to your 401k, a sufficient retirement package, so that we have a lot of employees now that have been with the company from the very beginning. What was the other question you asked me? Oh, I know that we have a group within our company called the White Road Investments, that where we are investing in other sustainable food companies and consumer product companies so that they can grow and not have to sell out to venture capital or go public in order to grow their companies. So we've created an investment model within the, you know, sort of a as an outgrowth, but part of the Clif Bar universe, we would say. But we are not a cooperative. But we did consider and have explored B Corp. But when we went, when we became employee owned, we had our five aspirations actually built into the business model. Our legal team worked on this, so we are legally bound to deliver value against those five bottom lines. So in a way, we are similar to B Corp in that we are legally responsible to deliver value, not against one single bottom line. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, that's very helpful. And you've managed to grow the business all through internal financing versus having to have outside capital investors coming in to help support the growth?
Yes. In fact, what I think is amazing is in 2000, when Gary hired me, is we had a massive debt in order to buy out his partner. So we've grown over the past 10 years, double-digit growth, using this model of natural demand, you know, not going in debt to advertise, creating really quality products that people need, and we've done it with these delivering values against five bottom lines. I think it's a hopeful and it's a real model for the business world. I hope. I didn't. Yeah.
Lisa, could you speak to employee ownership about, you know, was that done in order to, I mean, is there some vision that sustainability ultimately requires employee owners, or was it more of a way to, you know, reward people for service? I mean, were you looking to get their voices more engaged?
Oh,
through ownership?
Even I think it's all of those. You know, we are deeply committed to staying private, and then by creating an employee ownership component, we deepened that commitment all the more. And we now have meetings where the entire company is there, and we get to look deeply into the financials and understand what's going on in the company. So we are. I think it really is a model that more deeply engages people. So it's an ongoing learning journey for all of us. We all had to go to, I think it was Finance 101. If you're an employee at Clif Bar, you need to understand how your company works.
Terrific. We've got, just want to make an announcement, we've got Tamara Ryan from the Women's Bean Project on October 25th here on Sustainable Business Fridays. We're a first and fourth Fridays event. If you'd like to ask Elisa Hammond a question, please hit 5-star on your phone, but we're back now to Amy and Megan.
Great. Thank you, Eben. Elisa, on this theme of thinking about Cliff's growth and managing for five bottom lines, when we spoke recently, you shared with me the importance of partnerships and relationship building as a key element of Cliff's growth strategy and really ability to thrive. And I wonder if you might share a story or an example of a partnership or key relationship that you think has had a great impact on the business.
Oh, there's a lot of stories like that, Megan. Megan, right? That
yes.
And a couple of them come to mind. One is a supply chain relationship that in, I think, 2005, we really started to visit our Tier 1 suppliers and talk about sustainability. We were on a sort of a fact-finding mission to better understand how energy and materials move through our ecosystem. And so that brought us to a visit to our logistics partner where we would warehouse and from where we would ship our products. And that was a family-owned company, and I remember sitting around the table with the president and vice president, and we said, they said, you know, we don't really know much about sustainability, but we're willing to learn. We're willing to go on this journey with you. And over the years, I've watched that company switch to biodiesel, put on solar arrays on the roof of their warehouses, get an award and become speakers with the Smartway Energy Program, EPA program Smartway. And then start a community service program that is just really amazing. Participate with us in good company. And I feel so inspired by that relationship. And we can, I use it as a model for the other supply chain relationships that we want to create, where you don't have to be green. Cliff Bar wasn't a green company to start, but if you have a willingness to learn and a willingness to take the first step, it opens up a whole new world and of business. And now this logistics partner will say that they are now a green logistics company because all of all the the changes they have made, they have a new value business proposition to offer other customers. There's other partners that we work with, like Native Energy, who's our offset provider, and that we chose to work with because they create offset projects that generate social value as well as environmental value. And if we're going to take responsibility for our carbon footprint, you know, what better way than to support a school-owned wind turbine where now a school can not only provide their own energy, sell energy to the community, but allow their students now to take classes on renewable energy. I've seen that. I've climbed up 275 feet inside of a wind turbine at one of these schools in Indiana, and then I've attended classes where I've watched the kids do science projects about wind energy. Another partnership that I am so grateful for is with Eben and this program, and I remember going to my first workshops on climate change. And the two things I remember learning from Eben, who was doing grassroots education programs, was that it's not enough to use renewable energy. It's not enough to reduce your carbon footprint. With the scale of the problem that we're facing, we need to build the climate movement. And that really affected me. That's our mission here. We need to build the climate movement. We need to build the sustainable business movement. The other thing Eben said is we need to rewire the planet with clean, renewable energy. So these conversations that come out of these meaningful partnerships give us our roadmap.
Elisa, that's Roth Gelfband's line. I stole it from him. Or I didn't steal it. It's a conversation piece that I think is free to move around the world. But it's a very powerful line, and I'm grateful to Ross for that.
Me too.
Yeah. So, Megan, Lisa, Amy, back to you guys.
Thank you. Lisa, we recently learned that the company, the Cliff Bar, just celebrated its 20th year anniversary. We actually saw a very awesome YouTube video that showed all of Cliff Bar's employees getting a custom bicycle to celebrate the 20th anniversary. When sustainable business thought leaders talk about best practices in terms of employee engagement and a positive work culture, Cliff Bar is often cited as an example and a best practice of how to do this well. Can you talk a little bit more about the initiatives that Cliff Bar goes about to drive employee engagement?
Well, you know, one simple thing that for those employees that are in the office in Emeryville, California, every Thursday morning is a breakfast meeting. There's free breakfast, and then there's a half an hour where everyone is together, and sometimes the meeting is funny. It's your Halloween costume. Maybe it's a serious talk on financials. Those of us in the field can call in. There's an employee letter of the week. It's a place to gather as a community, and I think that's really important for maintaining a sense of who we are. As far as our sustainability program goes, we really started with employee engagement with a commitment to employee education. You know, I came in as staff ecologist. We knew we wanted a sustainability program, but we weren't quite sure how to start. So we started with grassroots education, with a newsletter through email, conversations with people in different departments. And what we saw is, once people understood that concept of sustainability, they started to come up with the right solutions for their departments. That's where, at that time, we were using virgin paperboard to make those caddies, the card paperboard boxes that hold our bars. And then someone in operations said, you know, I think with our commitment to sustainability, I'm going to explore using recycled paperboard. And today we're using 100% recycled paperboard. And it's because of that kind of initiative that this one employee took. And we have so many examples of that coming from a grassroots understanding of sustainability. I think some of the most exciting ones have been in field marketing, where they say, how do we go around to our events? How do we support events at the same time supporting our sustainability goals? And that's when we started things like a climate-neutral mobile marketing tour. We started some projects that are no longer, you know, we had cool tags called Start Global Cooling, and we continue to move into these different programs like LunaFest that I mentioned, or the kids programs, or Meet the Moment, where we're supporting nonprofits that protect wild places. Because sustainability started at the base. Is that helpful?
Yes, very helpful. I also enjoyed when you mentioned in the beginning of our call how employees can bring pets to work. I think that's a great initiative to drive employee engagement and to keep people motivated in their day-to-day job.
Can I follow up on that one before? Because it's a broader question. So how do you deal with conflict between these different goals? And obviously, what if you have somebody who doesn't like dogs or is allergic to dogs? That's kind of one level, but let's take that up a level. You've got five aspirations that you're managing for, and I bet the most interesting part of your work is trying to find creative synergies among those when it seems like they're in direct conflict. So you can speak to that maybe.
You know, even that is a great question that I think we continue to try to figure that out. So you'll have meetings. You know, we all are aware that at sometimes one aspiration needs to take precedence over another. But what we have is that everyone can come to the table and ask the question, you know, well, if we make this change in the way we're running our operations, how will that affect people or how will that affect the environment? And now we're starting to move in a place where we may ask for more quantification so that you come to the table with your information on, you know, reduced carbon footprint if you need to advocate for the way of, you know, a change in ingredients or a change in manufacturing. And it's not there is tension there. And I think our CEO has said, let's welcome tension into the conversation. so that we do create a place where we can have a conversation and then land on a place that everyone feels good about. I think that creating, you know, a formal process for that is, it's continuing to evolve. But what I have seen is I've seen it go from theory, where like this idea of five aspirations, to actually being put into practice in meetings. And it's not easy to make that move from idea to practice. So Eben, I will keep you posted about how we continue to evolve that. But the reality is that we are allowed to ask those questions. It's our responsibility to ask those questions.
Have you had pushback on the dog issue? I'm curious, because this is an issue that comes up in everybody's workplace when people sneak dogs in and then somebody complains. And do you know how this one was worked out?
Oh, everyone loves those dogs. You know, our office is this space. We're not in a crowded small office. We have really high ceilings. We're in a building that was formerly a manufacturing plant for, I think, submarine propellers in World War II. And it was retrofitted to be this green office. And there are a lot of dogs. As you go around, there's a wonderful French bulldog in one area, or the little one-eyed chihuahua. And you can't have a bad day when you see a French bulldog keeping a balloon in the air, you know, and everyone's gathered around. Or you'll be walking through the office and someone throws a ball down the hall and there go the dogs running. And I think that there would be an uproar if people could not bring their dogs to work.
So I guess it's one of those cultural things where
we have a no cats policy.
You do have a no cats policy.
Yes.
Okay. Dogs are interesting. Okay. I guess it's one of those culture things where people fit in or they don't fit in. If they walk into a place and they see lots of dogs and they're allergic to dogs, they go, "Well, I guess this isn't the place I want to work." So.
Yeah. But actually, even I saw research in a psychological journal that said having dogs at work actually makes people happier.
It would make me very happy, frankly. It's my place to work. So I think we have time for maybe just one or two more questions. So Megan, Ryan, and Amy, back to you.
Sure. It sounds like such a fun workplace, Lisa. I wish I could be there. I'm curious about, as Cliff has moved in the past 10 years into this commitment towards organic and managing to five bottom lines, whether it has changed the mix of staff competencies that are required, whether you've had to create a lot of new positions or think about specific positions differently. I think about, you know, a traditional procurement position in a different company might be very focused on price negotiations and logistics, but a procurement person in Cliff Bar, I'm sure, has a very different role where it requires a deep understanding of sustainable agriculture and a real willingness to engage with suppliers. So I wonder if you could speak to the changing staff competencies that are required as an organization shifts towards sustainability.
You know, I have seen a change in the way we're staffing, and one of them is that we have really amazing people that apply for jobs, you know, because they want to work for a values-based company. So the quality of applicant is just amazing. What we do need, people with experience and expertise in whatever area they're applying for, you know, food science or research or logistics or operations or marketing. So first and foremost, we're getting people with real expertise in those fields, but then they have to have a commitment to an understanding of our sustainability values and our company culture. And we aren't requiring that they understand the nuts and bolts of sustainability, but we do look for people with a commitment to supporting those values and to ongoing learning. So we're actually working with our sourcing department right now to help the sourcing team learn more about sustainability so that comes into every conversation with vendors. We have a sustainability survey that the sourcing team is responsible for working with the vendors to fill out. And in the process, they're learning a lot about sustainability. But I think as people look to bring sustainability into the workplace, they need to look at both of those, an understanding of sustainability, a commitment to be collaborative to promote those values, but also to have real business knowledge in whatever area they want to go deep in. So I think that, you know, for example, what you're doing with the Green MBA program, you're finding your niche in business and is your strength finance or marketing or operations, and at the same time bringing in that deep understanding of what true sustainability is. We need people like that in every business in America.
Megan, do you have a last question?
I think that's great. I was going to ask something about, you know, what are the key skills that those of us on the call who are in a, you know, green or sustainable MBA program should look to sharpen in order to position ourselves well to be able to add value to a company like a Clif Bar, or perhaps even a company that is just starting out on their sustainability journey and needs this kind of background and expertise to help guide the transformation.
You know, I think the experience you're getting, we've talked about some of the internships that you've done. Bringing that kind of experience to the job search will be really important. And in addition, I know it's helping you identify what really makes your heart sing, you know, in choosing more specifically the kind of work that you want to do. So I encourage you to continue getting that experience in these sustainability internships, but also then to think about where you want to continue to improve specifically your business expertise.
Lisa, we're at the top of the hour, so I just want to let you take it out in just a minute. And so think about this for a question. Sort of what do you see as the next big hurdle for Clif Bar? Before you get to that, just want to thank everybody for joining us today. This is the Sustainable Business Fridays is a first and fourth Friday call, so at the end of the month, October 25th, we've got Tamara Ryan, who is the CEO of the Women's Bean Project, talking about their work helping low-income and unemployed women transition into work. Should be a great call. If you'd like more information about Bard's MBA and sustainability program, you can get us online at bard.edu/MBA or send us an email at mba@bard.edu. Let me just say before I turn over to you, Lisa, that it's always a pleasure to talk to you. You always make me feel so optimistic and hopeful because Clif Bar is such a fantastic company. It's been one that I've known about for over a decade now, and it's always been inspiration for me thinking about what we need to be doing in terms of our business education. So any last thoughts on kind of what the next frontier is for sustainable business?
You know, Eben, I think Clif Bar, food companies in particular, but all businesses and communities, we are in for a wild ride ahead because of climate chaos, you know, and unpredictable events that are going to really demand us to think more about resiliency and building resiliency into our systems. And that, I think, is a challenge that we need your students working on, we need everyone working on. The good news, think like a tree, Eben. The oldest living things on the planet are trees. I think they could be some good business models for us.
I like that a lot. So with that sort of vision that we all should be thinking like a tree for the next few weeks and beyond, thank everybody for joining the Sustainable Business Fridays with the Bard MBA in Sustainability. Thank you, Amy Davila and Megan Ryan, for taking the lead on questioning today. And our best to everybody at Clif Bar.
Thanks.
Okay, bye-bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.